listening to KTNA Talkeetna. And now for Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the Northern Susitna Valley, created by your friends and neighbors at Pothole Productions and Talkeetna Community Radio. From comic relief to serious beliefs, each week brings you a fresh nugget. I'm Jen Vaughn, and tonight's show features some local commentary and some expert insight regarding Alaska's invasive weeds issues. First, a little bit about myself. I'm from Coal City, Illinois, and recently graduated from Southern Illinois University with a degree in plant biology. I'm here in Talkeetna this summer on an internship through the Student Conservation Association. I'm working for the Upper Susitna Soil and Water Conservation District as the assistant leader for the Youth Conservation Corps. We do a lot of work with invasive weeds with the YCC, so I've had some firsthand experience dealing with the local issues. During tonight's program, we'll hear from Forrest Cook, a 17-year-old Talkeetna resident who is currently on his fourth summer with the YCC and is a veteran root killer. We'll also hear from weed scientist Steve Seifelt, a researcher for the ARS. As I already mentioned, the YCC spends time each summer pulling invasive weeds such as white sweet clover and spotted knapweed, but the toughest battle over the years has been with orange hawkweed, a very tough plant that will continue to grow unless every root and rhizome fragment is removed from the soil. Forrest is here with me now to talk about his experiences with this weed. So, Forrest, what are some of the weeds you've pulled with YCC?
Oh, I've pulled a lot of weeds over the years. White sweet clover being one of them, orange hawkweed, of course, dandelions, hemp nettle, bird vetch, the list can go on forever.
And what are some of the locations around the area that you've pulled these weeds?
All around East Talkeetna, in Trapper Creek, behind the elementary school, at the airport.
Tell me about your first encounter with orange hawkweed.
Well, it was in 2005 on my second year with the YCC, and we just went around East Talkeetna pulling weeds before the problem got really out of hand, pulling orange hawkweed.
So what is it like trying to eradicate this weed by hand?
It's a pain. You gotta get every single piece of root and rhizome, otherwise each fragment of root that you leave behind can grow into an entirely different plant, and it doesn't take much either. And just a less than a half an inch long fragment of root can start a whole new patch of hawkweed.
So in your opinion, has the local orange hawkweed problem improved or worsened since your involvement?
Well, we've definitely gained ground, and so has the hawkweed, and we've pulled quite a bit. We've eradicated a lot of it in a lot of areas, and I feel like the Youth Corps has really done a lot for the problem.
So what can local Talkeetna residents do to help with this problem?
Well, first of all, they can eradicate all the invasive weeds on their property first, and then in the future take part in community weed digs.
Okay, well, thanks for speaking with us today, Forrest.
No problem, Jen.
In agronomy, and he specializes in weed science. He's employed by the USDA and the Agriculture Research Service, and he's based out of Fairbanks. So I'm going to ask him some questions about invasive weeds. So what got you interested in working with invasive weeds?
I guess it all started with my PhD research. I worked on a project that studied why wild oats had become resistant to herbicides. And through the course of the research, the question came up, well, what happens when there are no herbicides left that work on wild oats? You know, how do you control those weeds when you can't fall on that big crutch of herbicides? And that led me to look at other weeds that were problematic in wheat cropping systems in Washington. And there are some that there are no herbicides that you can use that don't also kill the wheat. So then I started focusing on competition between the crop that you were trying to grow and the weed that was competing against it. And how do you make the wheat more competitive? And then that led me to do some work in pasture systems to reduce herbicide use by making the pastures more competitive. And all of those weeds that I was working with were weeds that were exotic, that had come from other places. And then I just sort of fell into this whole issue of, well, almost all of the weeds that you face in a cropping system or a grazing system or natural systems, they're invasive. And with my background and stuff, I just moved that way. So now I focus a considerable amount of my time on invasive weeds.
Okay, and could you tell me about some of your ongoing research?
I have several projects. Some of the research deals with white sweet clover that's growing along the roadways. We have some projects that are on the Dalton Highway, which heads north to Prudhoe Bay. We're, of course, working on orange hawkweed here in Talkeetna and down to Homer. And then bird vetch is another weed that's fairly problematic in the Fairbanks area and has started moving into native systems with more rapidity than I thought it would. So those are three invasive weeds that I'm working with. I'm also doing research on the Conservation Reserve Program lands in Delta Junction. I'm working with weeds and potato systems down in the Palmer-Wasilla area. And I'm looking also at doing some research on the weeds along the roads of all the highways here in Alaska.
So how does Alaska's problem compare with that of other states?
Well, Alaska's just getting started with the invasive weed problem. I'm so used to going to places and seeing mostly exotic weeds in any kind of disturbed area. So if I go into a town or if I'm on a roadside or anywhere, almost anywhere in the United States, the majority of the plants that I see, whether it's species or weight or anything, it's just invasives time after time in the cities and in the ag fields that have been abandoned. And you know, it's just what I've come to expect. You know, I look down at the ground and go, oh, that's invasive, that's invasive, that's from Europe, that's from China. In Alaska, I can look at the ground most of the time and see native plants, and there might be the odd exotic. Now, in some places in Fairbanks, though, I can go to areas where I'm hard-pressed to find a native plant in an area that I can sort of stand and look, you know, maybe 10 meters in any direction, there might be a majority of invasive plants. And in some cases, almost all of them are invasive.
Are there certain regions of the state that are worse than others?
Yes. The southeast, the logging areas, they're pretty bad. The area around Anchorage, there's a considerable amount of invasive weeds. And then along the road systems, there's quite a few. Now, as you go further north up into Dalton or as you head down the highway towards Canada, they do start to fall out. And then once you're off the road systems, they pretty much fall out. And so you again become hard-pressed to find anything besides the odd dandelion.
So invasives cause a lot of problems, but in your opinion, what is the number one problem that we need to worry about?
That's a good question. In my mind, everything's tied together. You have plants in an area, and there are bacteria and insects and animals that eat those plants or use those plants, and they're all sort of fighting for resources and space, and you know, and there's this balance here, and if it rains or it doesn't rain, population goes up and down and species shift back and forth. You know, there's just the cycle. And so you throw something new into the mix that nothing eats, and that thing may be allelopathic, which means that it'll add compounds to the soil that make it hard for other things to grow. It sort of messes up that balance, and now insects that used to be sort of more common become less common, or others that were less common become more common. It just makes everything start to go one way or another that's different than how it's been going. And where it ultimately leads to, gosh, it's just a wild guess. Some of these invasive plants that I mentioned, bird vetch and white sweet clover, they fix nitrogen. So if you have these plants, then your soil can end up with a lot more nitrogen. And in Alaska, most of these ecosystems are nitrogen poor. And the plants have developed in this nitrogen poor environment. So you add nitrogen, now you're going to have this big switch in the species that benefit more. So it'll just change the dynamics of what plants are out there in abundance and which ones sort of disappear.
Okay, and you've already mentioned some things, but basically, how do invasives differ from the native species? What makes them so much more adept at colonizing and taking over areas?
That's been an interesting debate amongst a lot of weed scientists. And, you know, is there any one thing? And I would have to say that generally the thinking is there just aren't the predators. There aren't the diseases, there aren't the insects that are pressuring these plants. So many insects and diseases are specific to one species of plant or one family. And so you put something new out there and there just aren't any diseases. And so you look at the leaves and they're all very healthy. They don't have spots, they don't have bites out of them. And that really seems to give them an advantage. Nothing is preying on them. And so nothing's slowing them down.
And how do you estimate that most have arrived here?
I think most of the time they're brought in accidentally. If a farmer comes up and he brings some hay, well, there might be some seed in that hay. You buy plants at the nursery, and they were grown up in Oregon or Washington, and there were seeds in that soil, you know, and so you put them out in your garden, and they spread from there. Even seed packets, you buy wild seed, you know, and it comes from China or wherever it comes from. You know, there's other seed in there. There's contaminants. A farmer that goes and buys a bunch of wheat seed from Canada, he could bring up oats, wild oats, by mistake. It's just in there. It could be in your clothes or... So how it actually gets here originally through the transportation network generally.
And what characteristics do the most easily invaded sites have? What do they share?
Typically, it's a disturbed site. Something that's been plowed, something that's been torn up, a logging site. Any kind of disturbance that's sort of opened things up, that presents an opportunity. In weed science, we like to talk about safe sites. If you have seeds in the ground, you could have, 50 million seeds, but there's only maybe 80,000 spaces that seed could safely germinate and establish and, go through all the processes of having enough resources and nutrients and seed soil contact. And if you have a spruce forest, let's say, with the thick moss layer on the bottom, there's not a lot of safe sites, and you can throw all kinds of seed out there and perhaps nothing will ever germinate. But if you come in and knock all the trees down and burn up all the litter, so there's just soil there, and then you throw the same number of seeds down, suddenly, you have a major weed problem.
And fires are an important part of some ecosystems. Do they usually enhance or alleviate the problem, like controlling fires?
That's some of the research that I'm conducting on the Dalton Highway with white sweet clover. And it appears, based on our early measurements, that with white sweet clover, when you have a wildfire, that actually creates more of those safe sites, and so it makes it easier for the plant to move. And that's been my finding in research that I've conducted in Idaho. When you have fires, typically it gives the advantage to the invasive species.
Has any link been found between climate change and increased invasion?
Boy, that's, again, a tough question. You know, if... Let's take Alaska. It's very cold in the winter, and it seems to set back a lot of species. Canada the thistle has a huge underground root system, but it's so cold that it seems to freeze up those roots, and so the Canada thistle isn't expanding as much as I would think it would. In Alaska, it seems to be in just a few areas and not growing. If it warmed up here, I could see it maybe starting to spread. My expectation is, as the state warms up, or as this region warms up, it will become more susceptible to invasion.
So what species of invasive plants are currently posing the greatest threat?
Oh gosh, in Alaska we have a group here. It's called SNPM, the Committee for Noxious and Invasive Plant Management. I think that's quite a good name. Mm-hmm. And we were asked to come up with a top 10 list. And sadly, I can't read off that list. I don't know exactly what it is. But some of the things we're very interested in, and in some cases they aren't here in big numbers, but the concern is that they will be. Purple loosestrife is very scary, and it's been found a couple of times in Alaska, and once it's been found, people have really gone after it. If that were to ever establish in the water systems, gosh, that would just be tragic. So that's even though it isn't a big one here yet, it's a real concern. Orange hawkweed and bird vetch have both been documented to move into native ecosystems, open forests, undisturbed grasslands, and so that's a real concern. You know, if you know that it's only going to move into a disturbed area, well, then don't disturb it. But if it moves into a natural area and you don't have to do anything to encourage it, it just does it. That makes that a very dangerous weed. Japanese knotweed, the complex of Japanese knotweeds, is very, very scary. They get to be huge. And then there's some ornamental trees that you could call weedy, I guess. A bird cherry in Anchorage is a big problem. And some of the stream sides where there ought to be alder, now there's just this bird cherry.
So here around Talkeetna now, we have a big problem with orange hawkweed. And I'm curious, in some states, orange hawkweed is an invasive, but why is it considered invasive here and not in other states? What's the difference?
I think orange hawkweed is considered noxious throughout the United States now. I don't know, and noxious is sort of a legal term. It has implications with it. I'm not sure of any states where it hasn't been declared noxious. Now, I could be wrong, but it has been recognized as a particularly nasty weed.
So how do you feel about the use of herbicides?
What I know about herbicides is that they can be very, very effective. If you're careful, if you know what your goal is, if you know what the consequences of their use are, you can come in and in very short order make very big changes to serious problems. And then once that problem is sort of under control, then you can go in with other maybe less hard-fisted approaches to get rid of those last little bits. I remember when I taught a weed science class at Washington State University, I asked the kids in the class, mostly farmer kids, why do people use herbicides? Why do farmers always use herbicides? You know, it's sort of what you do if you're in agriculture. 50 years ago, 60 years ago, there weren't any herbicides. There was, you know, there's never an option. But now everybody uses them on almost all their acres. Why? And I got all kinds of reasons, but the bottom line is, if you have an 80-foot spray boom and it's going along at about 8 miles an hour, you're getting really good weed control at about 45 seconds an acre. And how long would it take you with a hoe to weed an acre of ground? You'd be out there for days. And that's how it used to be. So, you know, people have used herbicides inappropriately. They've put them in places where they shouldn't have been. There's been impacts on native species. Sometimes they've caused more harm than help. They killed out what they wanted to kill out, but then something worse came in. So with something like that, that a technology like that, you know, there's definitely a use for it. But you have to be very clear about what that use is, and you really need to know what the consequences of that use are. So I'm not someone who's pro or con, but they have a place. And when a situation gets really bad, sometimes having that big sledgehammer is really nice, because then you can take it out. From there, you can go to other techniques.
So how do people contribute to this problem?
The problem of invasive weeds. I don't think anybody intentionally says, oh, I'm going to go plant purple loosestrife in this river bottom over here. You know, I don't think people intentionally contribute to the problem. I think most of the time it's inadvertent. You know, we were walking out at the airport today, and I picked up a lot of dandelion seeds in my shoes, and I wasn't very careful about knocking them off, and we came up here to the radio station. And so, you know, some of those seeds have probably dried off and fallen off my shoes, and so I'm an agent of spreading dandelion. If the orange hawkweed out there had been in seed, I'd been a whole lot more careful about leaving that site, because my shoes would have had those seeds on and I would have wiped them off there. You know, you drive through an area and stuff sticks to your tires, gets on your clothes or in your dog's fur, and you know, they move from place to place and you really just don't think. I remember going to New Zealand when I lived there, and my daughter had her hiking boots, and we got to the airport and they pulled them out and said, these hiking boots are dirty. They were in her luggage. And they cleaned them off before she was allowed to take them into the country. You know, and I'm sure there was some seeds in the dirt of those shoes that came from our lawn in Washington. So, you know, no, we didn't want to bring it to New Zealand, but there it was. Yeah, I think a lot of the transport is just inadvertent, or people just not really thinking about what they're doing. And so you take the road grader out or, you know, whatever, and seeds are all mature on the plants, and the road grader comes and spreads them all up and down the roadside. That's happening on the Dalton Highway. You know, the timing of when you grade the roads is critical. But nobody really thought about that until now, so...
So what do you predict for the future for Alaska in regards to invasive weeds?
There's, compared to the other states that I've been in, I think people are about a century ahead here in recognizing the problem that they can be to the state. And I think a lot of efforts have been started very, very early compared to other states. There are several weed species here that I would have to say, you know, we've lost it. We're going to have dandelion. There's no way you're ever not going to have dandelion. there are some other weed species like that, perhaps white sweet clover, you know, we're just going to have it. It's sort of naturalized now, and it's just going to be there. Maybe we can limit its spread. Maybe we can reduce its densities. But there are a lot of other weed species where I think the infestations are small enough that if people are concerned, and they are, and can be mobilized, I think a lot of those can be knocked back. And in a disturbed area where they are, as it reverts back to a native forest, for example, I think those weed seeds will essentially grow old and decay before they ever get a chance to germinate again. So, you know, we do have this ecosystem, and if we can keep disturbance to a minimum, you know, I think ultimately a lot of these plant species we can get on top of and make them very, very minor problems.
Well, that's all the questions I have for you today. Thanks a lot for lending your expertise to our weeds program we're putting on today. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for inviting me.
That concludes our program for the evening. If anyone has any questions regarding the use of herbicides, contact the Cooperative Extension Service out of Fairbanks at 745-3360. Or if you have any questions regarding pooling techniques or would like a booklet with pictures and information, contact the Upper Susitna Soil and Water Conservation District at 733-7923. You've been listening to Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the northern Susitna Valley. Do you have a nugget you'd like to share? If you would like to host a show, be a guest on this program, or get involved in some other way, please call the station at 733-1700. You may also contact us through the website at ktna.org. Next week on Nuggets, host Charlie Lowe brings listeners a moose nugget.